Blog Talk Radio.
From their studio in the Feeding Arizona building in Youngtown, Arizona, it's the Boomer and the Babe Show with Pete Peters and Deborah Brown. Join Pete and Deborah and their guests as they give voice to 78 million baby boomers from coast to coast and border to border. Now here are the Boomer and the Babe, Pete Peters and Deborah Brown.
Yes, indeed. It is another Boomer and the Babe Show, and this is Friday, February 3rd, 2012. And we are broadcasting from our studios in the Feeding Arizona Complex in Youngtown, which is also the home of the Valley View Community Food Bank, where the food is always free. Contact them via valleyviewcommunityfoodbank.com for anything that you would like to be involved in their volunteer programs, or if you care to make donations, food, money, anything at all that will help this food bank continue to survive and thrive. It is absolutely doing a fantastic job here in the Northwest Valley of Phoenix, Arizona. So if you're interested in a philanthropic opportunity to give a little bit of time, energy, effort, and money, contact them at valleyviewcommunityfoodbank.com. And I'm Pete Peters, and Deborah Brown is probably listening back at the home office on the computer. When I told her that I was going to have this group of guests on today, she says, "I know that lady. I've seen her in." And she rattled off a whole bunch of stuff, and we're going to get into that very, very shortly. I just want to remind everybody that what we do with the Boomer the Babe Incorporated is more than just this radio show. We do e-books. We do mini-books. We have our e-book authors are also hosts of their own shows on the Boomer and the Babe Network here on Blog Talk. We do a little bit of business consulting. We are small business consultants, and we also do promotional products for people that are in need of promotional products. And our latest addition to our stable of projects is Experience Speaks, Boomer Experience Speaks, an online magazine with all kinds of information in there. We have a lot of the people that have been guests on our show are on the have written articles for us, and there's information from them and a link that connects them back to the show that they did with us. And this group of guests is no exception, and we will have that link up live. You can listen to this conversation again in the future, and you can give your friends that information, and they will be able to link to this show live through many different means. One is our website, and the other is our Blog Talk site. So they can go to boomerandthebabe.com. All the information is there. Sign up for the online magazine. It's absolutely free. We'd love to have you as a subscriber and continue to send you copies of the publication as they come out. I mentioned we have several guests today. This is very, very interesting group of people. They are in the movie industry and the acting field in New York, Broadway, theater, and so on and so forth. First of all, the leader of the pack, I guess we'll call her today for lack of a better term, the producer, writer, and actress in the movie The Red Suitcase is Dana White, and we'll get to her in just a minute. Also, Christopher Knobloch is the director of that movie, and we're going to be talking to him a little bit about directing. And also, the star of the show, star of Broadway, films, and television, Ms. Kathleen Chalfant is with us today also, as she plays the lead role of Ruth in this film. And thank you all for being with us. We appreciate your time, and let's get into some conversation. Let's start with Dana. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got involved in doing your picture, your movie, your film, and we'll get to Ms. Chalfant after you've given us a little bit of an intro as far as what you do and where you're from and how'd you get involved in this.
Okay, well, thank you, Pete. Thank you for having us. This is such an honor to be here on the show with you. Well, this has been, you know, an interesting journey for me and for all of us, but about 3.5 years ago, I started writing this movie. It's sort of an interesting story because I lived in New York for many years and had a very dear friend out there who was a playwright, And he came out here with a show, a play, and Kathleen was in the play, and I hadn't seen him for a while, so I ended up going to see the play. And we were having just a drink right before the show, and I was sort of telling him about some things that had gone on in my life. And he said, well, that sounds like a really good movie. And he said, I think you should write that movie. And he said, because if you don't, I'm going to write it. And I said, you're not going to write my movie. And so we talked a little bit, and he said, oh, we got to go to the show. It's time for us to go. So we ran across the street and went to the theater. And I saw this show, and Kathleen was in it, and she was just, like, breathtaking in it. She was so amazing. And the whole time that I was watching, you know, intermission and stuff, I had sort of going on in my head this idea of this new movie. And, you know, and I was watching her, and the character that she was playing was nothing like this person that I was planning on starting to write. But I was just so taken with her performance. And then I went into the lobby after the show was over, and I was waiting for my friend to come out. And I had never met Kathleen before, and all of a sudden I looked over and I saw just this sort of effervescent, beautiful woman walking out into the lobby, and it was Kathy, and I just looked at her, and it was just, she sort of took my breath away, and I thought, oh my God, she's the woman. And I didn't even have the name Ruth yet, you know, I hadn't actually come up with the name, but I just knew that she was it. And I said to my friend afterwards, I said, you must get me her. I want her for this movie. And he said, okay, well, you need to write the script first. So I said, okay. So I spent about a year and a half writing it. And then when I was done, you know, and he had, you know, I'd been sending him drafts and stuff. And when I was done, I called him and I said, okay, I think I'm finally done. And he said, okay. And I said, okay, so you have to hold up on your promise. I want Kathleen. And he said, okay, well, let me contact her for you. So he called her, and I sent her the script, and I flew to New York. She agreed to meet with me, and I flew to New York, and I met her at her place down in the village, and we sat on her beautiful rooftop, and we talked about it, and she said that, you know, she loved the script and wanted to do it, and I walked out of her place, and I walked all the way back. I think I must have walked about 40 blocks, and I was just, like, shaking the whole way. And I was just so happy, and so that was the beginning of you know, that whole process with Kathleen, and so then we eventually, it took a while to get some pieces together, but then we eventually shot a promo for it, and then Chris got involved, and you know, we decided that we wanted him to direct it, and so we're here now. So that's pretty much it in a nutshell.
and that promo is on is in the online magazine Experience Speaks, and people can see that promo by going to boomerthebabe.com and clicking on the magazine and seeing the story of the red suitcase, and that promo is there as well. So anybody that wants to see that and wants to find out more about it can do so. Well, let's talk to the star, this effervescent woman that you talked about, and the one that obviously has taken your breath away because you're very excited talking about her, Ms. Kathleen Chalfant. How are you today?
I'm fine, Pete. I'm so pleased to be talking to you all the way from New York City, where I am.
Absolutely. Is it cold in New York City?
We're not having winter this year. Apparently, it's you know, 45 or something, but the sun is shining and it's bright and the roses have no idea. I'm originally from California, so this is more like the weather I'm used to. So.
There you go. I heard that they'd called off winter in that.
Yeah, we're not having it.
Well, Kathleen, how is it that somebody gets into the field of acting? In the first place, how did you actually get started as an actress?
Well, this is peculiar. I can't ever remember wanting to do anything else. I had a much older brother, my brother Alan, who was 14 years older, so that I was sort of raised as an only child with three parents, that is to say my older brother, and then my amazing English grandmother, who used to take me to the movies all the time. And but she took me to the real movies, you know, like not to the cowboy movies and things like that. And I was born in 1945, so I'm just hanging on to being a boomer by a fingernail. So the first really fabulous movie I remember going to just with my grandmother was Miss Sadie Thompson with Rita Hayworth, and I thought that was swell. I would like to do that. And so I used to go and act out the movies by myself in our yard, because I was, you know, pretty much by myself. And I believe that my first stage appearance was at the Sacramento State Fair. I was dancing and singing. I don't do that anymore. And then when I was a kid, we lived in the Bay Area in Oakland, and there was a lot of community theater, so I got involved in that. And then I meant to study theater in college, but I didn't. I studied classical Greek instead. And then I got married right after I graduated from college, and my husband, the person I married then, who is my very same husband that I have even now.
Congratulations.
Said to me, yes. We were married in 1966. It's been a long time. Said, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I've always wanted to be an actress. And he said, well, why don't you do that? And so I did, and I kind of... You know, the 60s, we lived in Europe part of the time in the 60s, and I studied in Europe, but finally we ended up in New York in 1973, and I began studying with a wonderful acting teacher who is still alive, and he is in his 90s now. His name is Wynne Handman. And then I began working in new plays in New York, for the most part. The first time I ever did Shakespeare in public was in the late 90s in Shakespeare in the Park. So I became an actress kind of by hook or by crook. It kind of grew like Topsy. And I've been very, very lucky in my career, I have to say, to have been...
Excuse me, when you were younger, as a child, were you one of the kids that would say, come on, everybody, let's go do a show?
No, because there wasn't. Well, I mean, I remember as a kid, we always played imaginary games, but that were not so much directly the theater, because, of course, the other thing is that I grew up in California, and the movies were acting to me then.
Right.
You know, so we did that, and so we played these kind of epic imaginary games. We played a lot of war games, I have to say, because, you know, that was all that was on the we got our first television when I was 7, and everything that was on the television was Victory at Sea. So I can do a swell machine gun imitation, even now.
Did you want to do that? Would you like to do that for us?
That's it. That's pretty good. And so we played the kids, you know, well, we played these epic games, and we played, you know, games, cowboy and Indian games we played. So there was a lot of make-believe, and also because, as I said, I grew up basically as an only child with my glamorous gay older brother, who introduced me to all sorts of things, the theater and music and everything. I made things up a lot.
Mm-hmm. Great imagination.
Or at least an active one. I wouldn't want to comment on the quality of it.
Well, and looking at your bio that was on the website, and all the things that you've done on Broadway and off Broadway and movies and television, how difficult is it to transform from a movie actress to a stage actress to a television actress, back to Broadway, whatever it might be? What kind of transitions are involved?
By now I've been doing it for such a long time that I don't I don't know exactly how to answer that question, except that in some way you fill up the available space, so that if you're in a movie or television, which are very much the same as far as technique is concerned, the space is the space between you and the camera and whatever the real room is. Whereas in the theater, you have to both fill the space that is the stage and the space between the stage and the audience, because the thing that's made is the thing that's made in the middle between the people who are seeing it and the people who are presenting it. And in the theater, when it's successful, my husband and I went to see the Broadway production of Porgy and Bess last night, which is stunning. And anybody who comes to New York who's listening should run, not walk, to see it. And it does the thing, that amazing thing of creating this thing, this event between the audience and the actors in an astounding way. You know, it couldn't be a more artificial form. It's an opera. It's a particular kind of mid-30s modernism, the music, George Gershwin, and it just rips your heart out. It's just amazing.
Do you have a preference one over the other, movies, television, or stage?
I answer it, and it's true these days. Whatever, if it's going well, it's whatever I'm doing at the moment. Right now, I'm in the third week of rehearsal of a production of Tina Howe's play, Painting Churches, and I wouldn't be anywhere else for the world. I'm slowly turning into this crazy woman, Fanny Church, and treating my husband like the husband in the play, and it just seems like the best thing in the world to do. This summer, in August, I made a movie called Isn't It Delicious? And I worked every day on that movie, which is unusual because I'm usually not the lead in the movie. So, but in that case, I was, and I just loved it. And the two kinds of work couldn't have been more different. So, and when it's going badly, you think maybe you should do something useful in the world, like street sweeping. So that's the other side of it.
How do you choose a part or a role?
I can choose sometimes. If I'm moved by it, and if I think that I can illuminate it in some way, if I don't understand the person, then I think, I mean, what happens is often somebody sends you a play or a script or something, and you think, no, I shouldn't do this, and you know five people, your friends, who really should do it, and so I usually say, well, why don't you call up Franny or somebody? And that's when you have the luxury of making that choice. Sometimes I just do it because somebody asked, and it turns out, you know, and I didn't even think about it because it's you know, it's sort of like a job. The last movie work I did was a couple weeks ago, and it's a great big science fiction movie called R.I.P.D., and I went to the audition, and I never saw the whole script. I just saw my part, and I was one of three giant luminaries in this science fiction movie, and I didn't pay any attention. I thought, well, this will be fun, and it, you know, pays very well, so I'll do this. So I went, and I found out that the movie was starring Jeff Bridges. So I got paid a whole bunch of money to hang out with Jeff Bridges for 3 days. Now, how bad can that be? And Mary Louise Parker. And Ryan Reynolds. So
it gets better as the time goes on.
Absolutely.
I don't know. Maybe this is an indelicate question, but I'm going to ask it anyhow. How often, and I'll just make it as a general question amongst the acting community. How often do you think the fact that it's making nice money takes precedence over whether or not it's a good role?
Contrary to popular belief, being an actor, unless you're a big star, is not a huge money-making operation. So what most working actors do is to take enough jobs that pay, and you hope they're not, you know, politically offensive or artistically horrifying, so that you can do what you want. Because what you want to do, the theater, particularly off-Broadway and institutional theater, where the most interesting work gets done, pays nothing. At the moment, this play that I'm... It's interesting for people to know this. This play that I'm rehearsing for pays $272 a week. So, obviously, I had to go be in the movie, but that was a Jeff Bridges movie, so that I could afford to be in this play for 4 weeks of rehearsal and 8 weeks of playing in New York City.
Yes.
Where it will be treated as though it were on Broadway, except that, you know, it wasn't. So the economics of being an actor often have a lot to do with, you know, what you choose to do. And for people, you know, I'm lucky. I've been married forever, and so I didn't have to raise my children all by myself and things like that. So there were two incomes in the house and all, you know. So people, if you want to do your work and live a decent life, quite often you have to do stuff that, frankly, you would rather not ever look at again, at least.
May not be your first choice.
No. But, you know, people have to eat.
Absolutely. We have a friend here, more of an acquaintance, actually, through various organizations here in she's now in California, as a matter of fact. But her name is Helen McCready, and she is an acting coach, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
She's up auditions and so on and so forth. That's her business. Helen Wheels. Also, she is Hell on Wheels.
So Hell on Wheels is that's a really good name for a coaching business, actually.
Yes, Helen Wheels. She has a coaching business, and she runs auditions for studios and so on and so forth. And we went to one of the premieres that she had of a small movie here in Arizona a couple of years ago. And she is always, I've heard her say many occasions, that you can make a very comfortable living as a decent working actor. And she described what a working actor is, which I didn't really understand fully. And they are names that you, and faces you would see, and you go, oh, they're in this movie now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what she tells me that the working actor is.
Working actor is, and it gives you have a funny experience, because I get stopped it's kind of gratifying, but once a day or so on the street, and also when I'm traveling. And what usually happens is people say, I know you.
Mm-hmm.
Or people will say, you're from Dallas, aren't you? You're on the school board. And I say, well, no, I've actually never been to Dallas. Yeah, no, I know you. You're on the school board in Dallas. Well, no, I think I'm an actor, so you've probably seen me. No, you're from Dallas, and you're on the school board.
Well, what else do you know about me?
Right. So that it's interesting, and particularly if you work on television a fair amount, because television is so intimate. You know, it comes into people's houses, and people who are on television, especially if you're on Law and Order, which is on 24 hours a day somewhere, you know, you're like somebody's relative, because people say, I know you.
Yeah, and you hear the dum-dum, and all of a sudden all these people that you know pop up.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, Kathleen, I know that you're going to have to be leaving us shortly, but let me ask you one more question, I think, and maybe we can get you out on time. How was it that you were drawn to this role in The Red Suitcase?
All I had to do was read it once. This is a wonderful, wonderful movie, and it's a great story because particularly for this generation, it's a mother-daughter road movie. And both these women are vital, complicated, loving, sexual, adventurous creatures. And what else do you want? It's a wonderful and very moving story. And particularly because, you know, when we were kids, our parents seemed impossibly old, and we had, you know, nothing in common with them. We couldn't imagine sharing lives. But it feels to me like our generation and our children and grandchildren, partly for economic reasons and partly for social reasons too, I think, don't run away from home. I mean, I went off to college at 17. And never went home. I loved my parents and was perfectly fond of them. But I wasn't in constant contact with them, whereas my children and grandchildren, though all are professionals and have their own lives and everything, we're much more closely associated and have a great deal more in common. And I think that we see this. It's illustrated in this script, the commonality of experience, and also how complicated mothers and daughters are. So anyway, it was, you know, this was a no-brainer, as they say.
Very good. One last question, and then I've got to let you go. I know I do. When you're working in a movie, whether it's a new venture like you're working in now with The Red Suitcase and that you are also in rehearsal for in New York, how much leeway do you have, or how much leeway can you take if you say, well, maybe if I did it this way, it would be more convincing or not? How much of that are you able to do?
Well, that depends on your relationship with the director. All of this work is at its best collaborative, and it's very important for an actor to have a director that you can trust. Like Chris, we spent a week making the trailer. So the little promo you see is only a few minutes. We shot actually quite a lot. We shot for, what was it, 3 days, 4 days?
Mm-hmm.
And it's very important that you trust the director, because the director can see and you can't. It's not good to direct yourself from the inside. You can know how it feels or something like that, but you need an objective eye. And when you have that, then you can have a real collaboration between the actor and the director to find the character. Again, it's one of those things that you make together, based always on the script, because you want, the job is to make the creature that has been written come alive.
And it helps to have a really, really talented actress like Kathy as well.
The thing that might cover it then is something that I've heard a long time ago, is it's hard to read the label when you're inside the bottle.
That's absolutely true. That's exactly true. So on that note, I'm gonna go off to join this other collaboration. This has been a great pleasure, and you guys will have a very good time with Dana and Chris.
Well, thank you very much, Kathleen. I certainly do appreciate your taking the time to be with us today, and it's been a joy for me also to meet you on the phone.
Vice versa. Thanks a lot. Bye, you guys.
Bye.
Take care.
Bye.
Well, there we have it, huh, guys?
Yeah, she's extraordinary.
And Chris, she's I don't know her. I've never met her. This is the first time I've talked to her, and she was certainly very easy and enjoyable to talk to. So that was very nice. And I appreciate you making the call and seeing if she could come on the show, because that adds a lot to what we're doing here today also.
Absolutely. I'm glad she can make it.
Well, let's talk a little bit more to Chris about what Chris is doing and how Chris got involved in this the role of a director. I mean, I have a basic understanding, I think, based on just having talked to Kathleen, what a director is charged with doing and hopefully a good director can do. How did you evolve into being a director? You have been in the photographic side of the business, as I understand it. How did that evolve?
Well, one word, I guess, circuitously. I started out as an actor, actually started out in production well over 25 years ago. And I had a little foray into acting, and I've also been directing theater and film for, I don't know, a number of years. And with regards to The Red Suitcase, as Dana's husband, I was side by side with her through most of this process as she made her first. I'll never forget. I'm sitting in the dining room with her, and she had a long talk with her friend Alex, as she had described, and she said, at the time we were in the process of collaborating on another feature length script, and she basically talked about her conversation with Alex, and she said, I think I need to do this. And I said, I think you do too. So that began the whole process of The Red Suitcase, or the unnamed project, which we called it at the time. So, that's essentially how I initially got involved. First of all, I want to thank you, Pete, for having us on the show. It's really great. And, as you talk to Kathy, it's just amazing to get an actress like Kathy on board. I mean, with her abilities, she brings just so much to the role of Ruth, and it's a joy to direct someone like that and to direct her, particularly in a film like this. She's going to be glorious in the role.
Is this something that you said you've spent about 4 days now doing the trailer, I guess you'd call it.
Mm-hmm.
And now when you get into full production mode, what do you think you're going to be looking at as far as a length of time to film, produce, and so on and so forth? What kind of a schedule do you think you might be looking at approximately? I mean, I know you don't have that exact, but I mean, approximately, what do you think you're looking at?
Well, yeah, I think we're looking at anywhere between 20 and 30 days of shooting we'll be doing for the feature. Yeah, that's how it usually works out.
Now, is that considered to be a very short window, a small window? I mean, I hear these horrific stories about how it took so long to do it, and we ran into this, and we had to change locations, and so on and so forth. I mean, is that based on the nature of the film and the subject matter that you can control that, or is it something that you're just concentrating on doing, period, to keep it as tight as possible?
Well, it has to do with the nature of independent film. You know what I mean? You've got to try to cram as much as you can in the time that you have. You know, you've got to wrestle a lot of things, people's availability, and how many days of shooting you can afford to have. And when you're doing a film, a low budget independent film, you got to get a lot done. So
it's an art form, just trying to get it all done within
exactly. Exactly.
You're always juggling something, and you got balls in the air all the time.
Yeah, that's correct. You always are.
An independent film is a very specific, it's a specific way of doing things. You know, you don't have a lot of big guns behind you. You know, you're doing something pretty much on your own, and you're trying to have a certain amount of it allows you to have a lot of control over your own project, you know, which is wonderful. But with that comes, you know, the fact that you have to sort of run and gun it a lot, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting. Here's what little I know about film production or video production. We do videos as an example for people's websites, little 3-minute, 2-minute snippets. We walk into their place of business. I do a little B-roll panning around with my camera. Deborah does the interview with the proprietor. It's a one shoot, no retake wonder. One take wonder. You get one chance to get it right. We figure if you can't speak extemporaneously about your business, why are you in business? So and we charge them a moderate fee for that. And then we have other people that are in the Phoenix area who are film producers and videographers and do tremendous stuff, and it is just huge amounts of money. And by the time they get the key grip and the best boy and the dolly and the this and the that, and I walk in with a little camera sticking on a tripod and pan, and that's all. And that's all I do. But I mean, it amazes me sometimes when I see the results of what they've done on a really, really big budget and the results of what I've done with a little camera. I go, wow, what's really the difference here? For the end product, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting too, though. You know, one of the things that's sort of fun when you're in the world of independent film is that you have certain limitations, you know, obviously, because you don't have, you know, huge amounts of toys to play with, and you can't afford that. But what it does do sometimes, it allows for you to have to come up with really creative solutions
exactly.
to problems. And sometimes you find these wonderful gems that happen because you don't have excess. You know, you have to be so conservative with how you do things. And then all of a sudden you have this just sort of glorious solution that really fits. If this makes any sense, it fits the product, you know, it fits what you're trying to say, and it really, because you have to get to the heart of it. You really have to get to the very, very heart of something. You can't take a lot of time with all this excess. You know, you have to get to the very root of what the story's about and what the performance is, and, you know, it's just, in some ways, it's a really interesting
interesting
way of doing it.
Coming up with a creative solution due to an economic concern can sometimes be the best choice you make,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is really interesting. You know, I mean, you know, the best films are often, you know, the films that don't cost the most to make. You know, some of my favorite films of the year are some of the more low budget films, and they just use really interesting creative ways to tell a story. You know what I mean? And also, I think an audience nowadays is so desensitized; they see everything just so over the top that this is. Like a smaller film can also be kind of a really welcome relief, you know?
And for Chris and I think, you know, both of us, and I think I can speak for him, is that what's most important to us is storytelling, you know? And I think that when you're making a film like this, it's all about the story and it's all about the acting, you know? And as long as you can tell a really compelling story and the acting can be solid and beautiful, you have a movie. You know, and you don't have to have lots of bells and whistles. You just have to be able to communicate that to an audience in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to pay for stunts and people to fall off buildings.
Exactly.
Cars exactly. crash and explode and all that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
We could take volunteers if
they want to. Put your helmet on and buckle up.
Right.
Run that car.
I'd like to be in a movie.
On our days off, we'll do that.
There you go. Typically speaking now, when you've got the story behind the film and you're coming up with the idea and you're putting it together, and in the case, as you said, when we first started, Dana, that you had seen Kathleen in the production across the street or whatever it was,
mm-hmm.
where you were having your beverage, did you have any idea at all at that time who was going to take that role, or do you just do the role from the standpoint of writing it, and then you go out to try to match somebody for it?
That's interesting. I mean, I think all writers have a different answer to that question, and I think all projects probably have a different answer to that question. For this particular project, for me, it was everything happened so, in some ways, all together, really. You know, I mean, the role of Ruth is loosely based on parts of my own life. So I had in my head an idea of the woman who it was in real life. You know, so that was in my head, obviously, and then within an, I mean, it really was this quick, it's like why the story is sort of amazing, within 2 or 3 hours, I saw Kathleen walking into the lobby, and I thought, oh my God, she's the actress, you know, she's it. So for me, it was really all coincided, which in a way was a gift. I mean, it was kind of a glorious gift for me, because when I wrote the film, I always had Kathy in my head. You know, Kathleen was always in my head as I wrote it. And, you know, when we finally met, I laughed and I said to her, wow, I said, you don't know me at all, but I feel like I know you so well because you have been in my head for the last year and a half, you know. And so for me, it all sort of happened all at the same time. And like I said, you know, as I would write the role of Ruth, there was this sort of beautiful mix of Kathy, what I knew of her, and then this idea of this woman in my head who was more of sort of who the person really was. And so those things blended as I would, you know, sit alone behind my computer trying to figure out how to make this whole thing come to life. But yeah, so I mean, I don't know if that answers your question. But.
No, I think so. Now, is the movie and the script, is it completely flushed out now? I mean,
yes.
Yeah, everything is on paper.
Yeah,
everything
yeah.
is. I mean, who said what? Who struck John and Rand? The whole nine yards is all there. Do you have your directorial notes and so on and so forth, Chris? As far as how you want to shoot this, and you have all that information down also?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, and also when we start shooting, you know, a film is never completely done in your head before you start shooting it. So there's going to be lots of wonderful discoveries and stuff that we're going to make while we shoot it, you know. But, you know, I mean, this is just a really powerful, timely film about, you know, a woman in her mid-60s who several years before has discovered that the life that she had kind of planned on having for a number of years has vanished. You know, her husband leaves her at the age of like 60, and she finds herself struggling to survive both, you know, emotionally and economically. So struggling with jobs and whatnot. And it's about, you know, the film is about people who have to pick their lives up over again, and what are some of the effects of that, and what are some of the challenges of that, and you know, and it's all done through the prism of this. This cross-country 3,000-mile adventure. So it's a really exciting film, and you know, Dana and I are just so excited to be shooting this, hopefully sometime soon.
So what I've seen of the trailer, I've seen it a couple times. I've looked through it, watched it. It's interesting because it really, in some ways, can parallel the baby boomer lifestyle as it is today.
Mm-hmm.
Relationships between a baby boomer age person and their parent.
Mm-hmm.
And that reinvention, that changing, that different way of having to do things now may or may not be fully acceptable for both of them, but you've got to find a way somehow.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and I think that, you know, one of the things that the film just sort of, for me, it just kind of came out of me. You know, it was just like, wow, okay, this is like, I need to tell this story. But as the writing progressed, and once the writing was done and we began to collaborate and put all this together, it became so apparent to me how timely the film really was. You know, I don't think I had any concept of that when I first started writing it. But I started to become very aware, because of the responses I was getting from people, at how many people, you know, that were similar to Ruth's age and, you know, sort of her experience, how many people had been through similar situations, whether or not it was just having to start their life over again because of economic problems or a death, you know, a death of their spouse or a child or anything, you know, that people,
right.
It's kind of a universal theme. And I think even people younger, like, you know, the daughter's age and our age, like, younger people can respond to this too, because it's, you know, you can't get to a certain age in your life. You know, you actually can't get to your 30s, I don't think, and not feel at some point in your life that you've had to start over in some way, you know. And I think that we're not, in some ways, you know, I think it's important to have things out there that people can watch and feel that they're not alone, you know. And, you know, obviously a film is a film. It's not, you know, it's not a psychologist, it's not something like that. But I think that art does have a way of healing. You know, it heals the soul sometimes. And I think when we connect to things and we see things and we watch movies or we see plays or we see a beautiful piece of art or hear a piece of music, there's something about it that can be very, very, you know, soothing and therapeutic in a way. And so and hope, really. You know, the film is really about hope. And I think that for me personally, I felt that it was important to tell a story that people could watch and listen to and experience and feel when they walked away from it, that they felt, wow, okay, you know, I can do this too. You know, I can move on too. And the other thing that was always very important to me is I see films oftentimes that are hopeful films, but they kind of have everything nice and pat. Everything seems like it's too perfect at the end. And I always find that I walk away from those movies feeling worse. Because I feel like, wow, it doesn't work out that well. And somehow
that's not life. That's not real life.
Right, exactly, Pete. You know, and you walk away feeling like, wow, I guess something's really wrong with me because my life didn't turn out quite that well. You know,
where did I screw up?
Right, exactly. But if you watch something where you see people are flawed and they're making all kinds of mistakes, but they're just, you know, they're doing their best to kind of get through it, and ultimately all we have is each other, you know, and the only thing that we can do is just continue on. That's really all we can do, you know, and we all do the best that we can. And so I felt it was important to tell a story that didn't wrap things up too cleanly, and that, you know, at the end you're just, you know, you just have hope. There's hope, and it's kind of an open-ended hope. So,
But you don't really know, throughout all of it, you don't really know where it's going to go, and, you know, and it's a nail-biter in that respect.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Well, if we have hope, we have nothing at all. I
exactly.
mean, that's kind of the way it is. And how many of us wake up in the morning and have some element or degree of hope that what that day is going to turn out like, what the longer-term view of things is going to turn out like, what the very long-term view of things is going to turn out like. And you hope that it's going to happen the way you would like it to happen. But, you know, you never can tell. But that's what makes it exciting.
That's right. No, that's right.
Absolutely.
And it is in how you feel about it, too. You know, I mean, it is looking at life that sometimes things don't work out the way you want them to, but it is a journey. You know, and that was part of what makes this idea of it being an adventure across the country was sort of a fun metaphor, because that's what life is. You know, it's the Wild West, usually. You wake up in the morning and you don't really know what's going to happen. You know, anything can happen, and it's sort of this, we've never lived this life before, you know, we're sort of explorers in our own life, and we're heading out into this sort of unknown territory, so.
Yeah, and also, like, the drive, you know, from rural New Jersey out through the Midwest, through the Great Plains, over the Rockies, and, you know, eventually out to the West Coast is, you know, what's going on is this woman, and this is like, you know, particularly true for people who are older, is that, you know, they have a whole life that they led, and as this woman Ruth goes across the country, it's kind of like it's one big, you know, this is your life, where she meets people from her past, and she has to deal with things from her past that maybe she hadn't dealt with before, and she's kind of analyzing her life, you know, as she's going through this really scary process of trying to start a life over. And, you know, I think her you know, the impulse that she's fighting the whole time is just to basically return to her small little house in you know, New Jersey. So it's, you know, she's she's looking at her life. She has to look at her life, and she's doing it as she's traveling across the country.
Yeah, and she has to also know how to sort of know what to let go of and what to hang on to. And I think that's the constant balance in life, is knowing, you know, what part of our lives do we need to let go of, you know, that will help us move forward, and what should we hang on to, because it's important to hang on to. And so that's what she's struggling with. You know, she's struggling with the ghosts from the past, and what should she, what can she, you know, move forward with.
Chris, let me ask you a little bit more of a technical question. And it came to mind when you said from the movies about the trip from New Jersey to California and things that happen along the road, so to speak. That's what makes it the road picture. About the locations, did you find all of the locations that you needed to shoot? Are they all pretty much right there in California?
Well, yeah, there, a lot of the locations are in California. We're also going to have a crew along with our two leads in a car. We're going to be shooting literally across the country as well to get them driving across. So you're going to be seeing them driving, you know, from the East Coast through Pennsylvania, through the Midwest, through the Great Plains, and over the Rockies and all that into the desert. Yeah.
And we call that a second unit. We're going to do a second unit shoot where we actually go and get some B-roll across the country.
Mm-hmm. So now, in the filming of that B-roll, is there going to be actual acting sequences in that B-roll then, or is it going to be the case where you're going to film the B-roll across the country and then you're going to have location shots that you find in California for the actual dialogue and interaction scenes?
Well, we may be doing a little bit of both.
Uh-huh.
Hopefully we'll be able to be shooting some scenes and whatnot literally across the country as we do it.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, you know, we're going to be shooting a lot of these films, a lot of the scenes we're going to be doing in one area, and then we're just going to be getting B-roll to cover up a lot of the rest. And that's kind of one of the things you have to do when you're shooting independent film.
Sure. Well, Dana, let's talk a little bit more about the economics of the film.
Mm-hmm.
I know that you're you have some situations that you're trying to overcome to get this film made. Shall we say it that way? That's number one. Number two, also, I know that based on some notes that you sent me, that you also are looking possibly to have this be of benefit to certain people in need. So why don't you tell us, as much as you feel free to tell us about what you're looking for, what your needs are, and what you're trying to accomplish.
Sure. Well, first of all, we're in a place right now where we have something recently happened to us. It's very exciting. We just were accepted by a fiscal sponsor, which is a non-for-profit organization called From the Heart Productions. They're a non-for-profit out here in California that actually supports unique independent films. So we're really excited because they, you know, they're going to help us. Basically, they help to get films made. So we're putting together something which we will have up on our website, hopefully by the beginning of next week, which will pretty much outline how we're going to try to fund the movie and get support from people. And we're basically going to be asking for donations from people through our fiscal sponsor, From the Heart. So that's the first thing. The other thing is, and then like I said, we will have that up next week, and we can maybe give everyone our website, and people can go next week to see that. The other thing that was always a big dream of mine was that I always felt that I wanted this film to give back in some way. And based on the story, you know, the story is about a woman who finds herself in obviously a very difficult situation. She's a very independent woman, but she still finds herself in, you know, financial problems. And I've always had a great passion for subjects that have to do with seniors and older people. So I really wanted the film to give back to an organization that would help primarily low-income seniors. So right now we're in talks with a couple of organizations right now so that when the film actually gets made, we have to make it first, but once it's made and we get profits from the film, we intend to give a portion of the proceeds of the profits of the film to an organization that helps fight things like senior hunger. And we're in talks with a couple of organizations right now. That will also be up on our website relatively soon. So that's you know, those are some of the things that to me are really important for us to feel that it's a movie that really gives back to society in some way.
So what I understand that you need your funding so you can proceed and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But what is your objective? What is your goal? When would you like to have this done by? I mean, as soon as possible, I realize. But, I mean, do you have any kind of a timeline?
Well, we really would love to start shooting in May. That was our ideal goal, you know, to start shooting the film in May, which gives us about 3 months to raise our money to start shooting. We just need the money to start shooting. We can also raise money afterwards for our post-production, but just to get the ball rolling, we wanted to shoot in May. So right now, that's our initial goal. If we have to push it to the fall, we may, but ideally, we really, really want to shoot in May.
Yeah.
So you get a shot in May. I guess the term is have it in the can.
Right. You're good at this, Pete.
Yeah.
You know your lingo.
Well. Just by listening. There is some practice. We actually filmed some commercials, a commercial show when we lived in Southern California. Deb and I did a show called It's Your Business, You Know It Best, You Sell It. And we had people that actually came on and sold their own product and their own service.
Oh, that's awesome.
And Deborah wrote the scripts. Some of them were, and this is off the subject, I know, but I got to tell you this story. Deborah wrote the scripts. Some of them were very, very campy. Some of them were dead serious. Other people were trying to be Zero Mostel or whoever. I don't know. And I did the camera work. I mean, I had myself laying on my belly inside in the pit of a bowling alley.
Oh, wow.
To watch the ball come.
That's dedication.
With this chip, big, huge chip camera that we rented. For, I don't know, Chris, what were they worth? $20,000 at the time?
At least, yeah.
Yeah, and I had this camera that we rented for a week, and we had to cram all of our commercial shoots into 1 week with all these people that didn't know what they were doing any more than we did. And,
that's awesome.
And I would be we were on a charter fishing boat, and I'm sitting, leaning over the rail of the boat, watching fish come out of the water, holding this camera right above the Pacific Ocean as the boat bobs and weaves.
That's great.
I mean, I look at that old video now, and I go, my God, what was I thinking?
You were a dedicated artist. That's what you were.
Well, that's how I know in the can, and that's how I know, fix it in post.
That's a common phrase.
That's a very common phrase.
Yeah, and the person that was our film editor always said to me, "Damn it, Pete, use the tripod." But I said, "I thought you could fix it in post." He says, "I can't fix that in post."
Right, exactly.
So anyway, let's get back to the subject of your film, which is what we're all here to talk about. So you've got this timeline. You're hoping to be able to shoot in May, and you need to have some funding so that you can get that underway for May. Worst-case scenario, is there another time frame that you're looking at, worst-case scenario?
Yeah, I think if things don't work out in May, we'll probably at least get started on you know, our pre-production, and we could shoot in the fall. That would be the next sort of open time slot.
Mm-hmm. You just don't want to do it through the summer months, then, I think.
We'll lose Kathy because she has a commitment in the summertime. So.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's about juggling some different scheduling things too.
Yeah.
Sure. So now, what kind of time commitment do you have with Kathy?
You mean, I'm sorry, what
is her availability? Her availability is in May?
Yeah, she's doing her show in New York until, I forget what date in April, but sometime in April, and then she's available part of April into May, through May, and then she leaves and goes out of town for a portion of the summer, and then she's back towards the end of the summer, but her schedule, fills up quickly, so we have to.
Sure, I bet.
We have to work around her, so.
Yeah.
Well, we're getting down to the short rows here. Why don't you go ahead at this time and give any of your contact information, anything you would like people to know about what you're looking for with regard to your funding and your website and so on. I'll also say at this point that if you go and see the Red Suitcase story on on our website in the online magazine Experience Speaks. The websites are all, the website is there as well. But what is it? Why don't we make sure we have it on this tape also?
Sure. Our website is www.theredsuitcasethemovie.com. And that's where all of our information is right now. And like I said, in the next several days, we're going to have everything up in terms of if people want to contribute and help to support us, they can support us through our non-for-profit fiscal sponsor, which is From the Heart. We're going to have all that information up there. Right now, it's From the Heart Productions. And if anyone wanted to contribute a check at this point, any kind of money, they are at 1455 Mandalay Beach Road, which is in Oxnard, California, and it's 93035. And Carol Dean is the president of that, and she's our fiscal sponsor. And, you know, if anyone wanted to contribute to the film, they would just have to notate that it was for The Red Suitcase. But all that information will be up on our website in the next several days, along with a link to a PayPal account, which is her account that's set up specifically for our project.
Give generously. We need your help.
Right. But yeah, so that's pretty much what we're doing now. And then we're going to continue to, one of the fun things that we want to do as we move along is one thing that's important to me is that we include all of our supporters into the making of the film, in the sense that we want people to be constantly updated and feel a part of the film. I think when you're doing a film like this and your people are coming out and supporting you, it's important that people feel a part of the process. And so as we move along, we're going to start, you know, shooting, once we get some money in place, we're going to start shooting some of our pre-production and shooting behind the scenes of stuff and start uploading some of that to the website so people can, you know, keep up with what we're doing and have a sense of, you know, how the movie's progressing. They can get to know all the people involved. And so I thought it would be a really fun way for people to feel a part of the film. So we'll be doing that as well. And, yeah, so like I said, everything's going to, you know, I'd love for people to go onto your magazine and watch our promo. It's going to be up on our website very soon as well. But I'd love for people just to get a sense of what it is we're doing and see if the movie really moves them. And if it does, then, you know, getting involved, we would love to have people get involved.
Well, I tell you, it's right there at boomerthebabe.com, The Red Suitcase. It's a two-page spread, and the trailer is on there. And other information can be available through their website, as I said, and that's also on that story. So there's ample ways of people to get in touch with you and then take whatever actions they deem necessary or see fit to do. And wish you all the luck in the world in getting this together, and keep me apprised, if you don't mind, on how it's coming.
Thank you, Pete. We will. We would love to come back and keep you posted.
Yeah.
Well, we can plan on doing that, too. Absolutely. Not a problem at all.
Well,
and
thank you.
Also, thank you again also for making that call to Kathleen and getting her on the program. That was a real treat to have her here as well.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Pete.
Thanks again. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye now. You've been listening to the Boomer the Babe show here on Blog Talk Radio, and we're having good conversation, hopefully, as always. And today it was with three fine people, Kathleen Chalfant, Christopher Knobloch, and Dana White, producer, writer, and actress in The Red Suitcase and developer of the story. And we hope you enjoyed the conversation, and we'll have more good conversation next week. Starting on Monday, we have shows every day all the way through the month of February at Blog Talk Radio, 10 o'clock Arizona time, 12 o'clock Eastern, 9 o'clock Pacific, and we invite you to join us with all of our interesting guests yet to come. So at this time, I'm going to say just have a great weekend, everybody. You can listen to the Boomer the Babe show live every Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on Blog Talk, and you can listen to the archive of this show and any others at blogtalkradio.com/boomerandbabe. Take a look at The Red Suitcase and other things that are going on in Experience Speaks, and that's at boomerandthebabe.com. Make sure to make the second half of your life the best half of your life, and we'll talk to you again next week, everybody. Thanks for listening. Listening.
welcome to the Boom and the Babe Show, where we bring interesting conversation to the world. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, where we tweet as Boomer and Babe, and on Facebook as Pete Peters 47. As always, you can friend us on Blog Talk Radio or sign up for our newsletter at boomerandthebabe.com. Email us at host@boomerthebabe.com with any of your comments. Remember, at 50, you're just getting started.